is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
Hey, everybody. It's Don LaGreca with the Monday edition of Game Misconduct. And you know what Monday means. Monday means the great E.J. Raddick. And when he's not talking hockey, he's ranting about his Yankees. And we started this recording later than we wanted to because he was ranting about his Yankees. He's E.J. Raddick. How are you, sir?
Yes. Well, I was just saying, it's time for change. And, you know, Brian Cashman, it's been a nice run, but see ya. You know, it's time for something new. And, you know, that decision to get Stanton a couple of years ago, what a disastrous decision. We already had a guy who was the same guy. Aaron Judge, who's a similar big, strong, power-hitting guy, right-hand hitter. But anyway.
All right, this is my respite. I'm going to get that. EJ, I got that for 4.5 hours coming up. One of the reasons I do Game Misconduct is because we can't talk 4.5 hours about what we're about to talk about on Game Misconduct. So.
True.
You know what?
Exactly.
Call the K-Show today and bitch and moan, okay?
I will call in later in between breaks of my show.
That's right.
I will call in to complain. Like, the worst thing of all is they're unwatchable now, and that's problematic, I think. But anyway, we digress.
So during breaks of NHL Now, on the NHL Network from 4 to 6 Eastern Time, EJ can squeeze in a call. EJ from Secaucus ripping Brian Cashman and the New York Yankees. But where to begin? I mean, here we are deep now into the second round. And for the Montreal Canadiens, they can finish off their second round tonight at home against the Winnipeg Jet team that, listen, they're not a great team. These are two of the worst playoff teams. That's why we know they're going to take on Colorado or Vegas when that series is over, just for the way the seedings are. But how much of this has to do with the loss of Scheifele? Not just what he brings to the table, EJ, but just the emotion of it all. Because they should not be down 3-0 in this series. They should be giving a little bit more than they're giving. Is it all about what happened in Game 1?
Well, I think losing Mark Scheifele is a big problem because he's your top center and it sets everybody back into a different role and creates problems. And they also lost Dylan DeMello, I believe, in Game 1, missed some time. And, you know, that creates problems on your defense as well because now you're bringing, you know, a Jordy Benn is in the lineup, but I watched Nick Suzuki just blow right by him last night. And, you know, there's a reason that Jordy Benn is like a 7th D. So, you know, these are problems. And, you know, here's the thing. The Montreal Canadiens have been on a nice run. They found their way in Game 5. The coach decided, you know what, hey, we're going to start really leaning on these four big, strong four defensemen we have with Weber and Edmondson and Sherratt and Petrie. And if you look at the numbers, those guys played a lot more minutes in Game 5, 6, right through here. They've been leaning on those guys. And it was, I think, a smart decision by Dominic Ducharme, who I thought started the playoffs kind of very confused about his lineup and who they were going to be. But, you know, Carey Price has been rock solid. The team has every confidence in him, as they should. Those big, strong defensemen are hard to play against. It's hard to get to the net. And conversely, if you go look at the goals scored in this series against Connor Hellebuyck, it's like a party going on in the crease.
Yeah.
I mean, the Canadians are, you know, they're reliving past glories, having conversations and enjoying life, in front of Connor Hellebuyck. And it's really, you know, that's to me the whole series has been so far, aside from the fact they also have a couple of shorthanded goals, which never help. But right from the start of Game 1, the two first couple of goals that were scored, Kotkaniemi on a deflection in front, and then Staal kind of out of a scrum, and we've seen a number of goals scored like that against the Jets. So, to me, I mean, this is merciful at this point, just to end this tonight, and let's, you know, get on with it, because, you know, Montreal has just seen much the better of the team, and, you know, Scheifele won't be back until later in the series if the Jets can win a few games. And, you know, I guess we shouldn't write anybody off because we saw Montreal climb out of that 3-1 hole to get to beat Toronto. But, boy, the Jets just don't look in sync right now at all.
And, you know, the short turnaround, which could actually work to the detriment of Montreal. I don't know if you've heard the status of Jeff Petrie at this point. Got his hand stuck in the camera hole in near the boards and did not finish the game last night, and you just talked about
that could be significant.
Yeah, because he's one of those four you just brought up. So, listen, I think it's too late for Winnipeg to take advantage of it to advance, but, you know, it definitely could hurt them, you know, tonight and get the series going. Because, listen, if Montreal's got any shot against the winner of Vegas and Colorado, they got to try to finish this series up quick and then just have Vegas and Colorado beat each other up for seven games, which I think is a very good possibility because it's men against boys. I mean, you watch the playoffs, and listen, I know Tampa's the defending Stanley Cup champions and all. This Colorado-Vegas series is on a completely different level. I've said it. I think the winner of that series wins the Cup.
Well, I wouldn't be so quick to write on Tampa, but I would say that I think that you might be onto something. And here's the problem, though, I have watching the series, is that Vegas has completely dominated the last 2.5 games. And if it weren't for the great play of Philip Grubauer and a kind of, a ticky-tack penalty in overtime that led to a power play goal for the Avalanche in game two, they could be behind easily 3-1. And as I watch, Don, sometimes you look and you go, okay, well, they're at home and the crowd and when they get back to Colorado, they could turn it around. I really wonder. I don't know what are the adjustments for the Colorado Avalanche. I mean, they're really hurt by, in this series in particular, by the loss of Nazem Kadri, who's proven to be a very unreliable commodity. With his actions where he got suspended. So now he's not there. So you have Yost has moved up to the second center spot. He's kind of been overwhelmed by that Carlson line. In Vegas, they've been able to use Stone and company and Stevenson to really kind of shut down the McKinnon line at 5-on-5. I look at that Colorado defense, and again, this is where things you don't notice start to really happen in certain matchups. And Eric Johnson has missed most of the year for the Avalanche, and he had a concussion problem. And, they didn't miss him all that much. They had these quick defensemen that are good players, and we've talked about some of them throughout the year. Cale Makar is a Norris Trophy-type guy down the road, and, we talked about Devin Toews from the Islanders coming in and being such a good player. But they could really use a big, strong guy like Eric Johnson in this series, someone that's longer and harder to defend against the bigger forwards of the Vegas Golden Knights. Because right now, Samuel Girard seems like he looks like he's getting eaten alive in these last couple of games. Patrick Nemeth is kind of showing us why he was a member of the Red Wings the last couple of years. I mean, this might be over his pay grade to be in these kind of games. Connor Timmins is a young guy that I liked as a junior, but really not a lot of experience. So right now, watching these games, and I think the shots are it's a 2-1 ratio. It's 100-something to 50-something. I don't have the exact numbers in the last couple of games, but it's been a shocking kind of domination, I would say. The Avalanche have really, really struggled in these last couple of games, and really going back even to that game too. So Jared Bednar tried to take his team to task after game three, and we're not working hard enough and we got to be way better, and he was very critical. And then last night, they had an early lead, and then it just fell apart. We're kind of a strange goal early in the game that tied the game, and then Vegas really owned most of the chances after that. So for me, I just don't know what the adjustment is for Colorado. They're not getting Kadri back until Game 7 at this point. And there might not be a Game 7 the way they're playing right now, Tony. I got to tell you, I'm really impressed with Vegas, and I would say that a couple of people have used this word, so I'll use it as well. They look more hungry.
Yeah, they do.
They're hungrier than the Avalanche right now. So, and they're bigger and stronger on defense, so we'll see how it plays out tomorrow night in Denver, but they're going to have to pull a rabbit out of their hat to get this thing turned around, because right now they're getting dominated.
And Vegas is a different team with a healthy Max Pacioretty. He has really been a force for them offensively, something they didn't have early in that Minnesota series.
Yes, he has. He's been red hot, and let's face it, if they win and Montreal wins, that'll be an interesting storyline that, Pacioretty was traded from Montreal, and there was some, I guess it wasn't a very happy ending there, and he ends up in Vegas, and so that could be an interesting series. But I don't know what to say. I'm really you know, the Avalanche looked so good in game one against a tired Vegas team. That extra day off in the playoffs, Don, for a team that loses and is struggling, can be so helpful in terms of just getting reset and getting adjusted. And because the Denver Nuggets were playing on the Tuesday, the two teams had to wait an extra day, and you saw the difference in Vegas in game three. There, game two, they were way better. And right now, even though the series is tied, it feels like it's really swung in their favor.
Yeah, it does. And the advantage, obviously, that they had, short turnaround for Vegas, long layoff for Colorado, it certainly worked to the Avalanche's advantage in that blowout win in game one. And as you said, you know, if not for that penalty in game two, you know, they could have won three straight here and be looking to make short work of Colorado. So we'll see if the Avalanche can bounce back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Bruins Islanders is everything we thought it would be, even at two. Huge game tonight back in Boston. And listen, there's been passion in both buildings. I don't think it much matters. But what I like about the Islanders is you don't like the fact they give up that early goal, but they've been able at least a couple of times in these playoffs be able to bounce back from it. I mean, what are you feeling going into this game five tonight? Those odd number games are always pivotal. 2-2 series, game five. You feeling anything after that game the other night?
No, I just think it's a real close series. And, you know, the Islanders give them credit for bouncing back. I mean, really, when you think about it, right, it was in both games, in games three and four at the Coliseum, I mean, it was a bad angle shot from Brad Marchand. It was the difference in the game that probably should have never gone in. And then it was a kind of swipe by Matthew Barzal, you know, picking a puck out of the air and, or just as it was landing on the ice and putting it past Tukarask. I mean, that was the difference in that game because there was just two empty netters at the end. So these are just close, tight, hard battles. And, you know, I think the Islanders have a little benefit in that they seem to be a little bit healthier. Now, they're missing the Islanders' lead, so that's a huge loss, and they've been dealing with that for a while. But, you know, Boston losing Brandon Carlo, that's a big loss because he's a big, long, right shot defenseman.
Yeah.
And this has been a theme of our conversation so far today, right? Big, strong, lanky, long defenseman. You know, and I think in the playoffs, those kind of guys are really valuable. It's the reason why Montreal went out and traded for the rights and eventually signed a guy like Joel Edmondson. And that's why Joel Edmondson was part of a cup winner because, like, he's not going to win it on his own. But he's a good piece in playoff competition, hard to play against, long stick, can be strong around his net and in those dirty areas. So Carlo isn't as physical, let's say, but he's a big, lanky guy that's just hard. He's a good defender. He kills plays early. And without him now, they've got to go deeper into their roster of defenders. So for me, that's a plus for the Islanders. I would expect the Bruins will bounce back. Bruce Cassidy's kind of called out his third line. Charlie Coyle and company, he'll probably make a one or two adjustments to his lineup tonight. Both goalies have been really good. Both teams have been in the battle. Matthew Barzal picked his game up the other night.
Yeah.
You know, it was quite a night for him. I mean, he was getting banged around. Then he was, you know, took a penalty himself. And then he makes a great play on the tying goal when he draws a penalty but stays with the play and gets it in front to Eberle, and then he scores that game-winning goal. Now, the question will be for Matt Barzal, can he take that game with him on the road to Boston in a tougher matchup situation likely and break through? So that's the question for him. But, boy, he was terrific the other night, and it had everybody looking back and at his draft year when the Boston Bruins had three consecutive picks, and Matt Barzal was not one of them, and he went next to the New York Otters at 16. So, you know, certainly he was making them maybe rethink that decision the other night because he was excellent in game four.
Yeah, and Beauvillier's been good not only in this series but in these playoffs too. They've been looking for that other guy, and maybe they found him.
Yeah, you know, I'll say this. One other thing about the Isles. They were in the, let's face it, they were in the Final Four last year. This is a team that's been together for the most part, a lot of these guys. You know, Barry Trotz has been there. This is a hardened group. And they've got a lot of guys that have kind of grown up in that organization as well. Many were drafted by the previous administration. They should get credit for those picks, and Beauvillier is one of those type of guys. But, like, the Islanders are not going to be an easy out. And neither are the Boston Bruins. And I think this is what you're seeing in these first four games. So I'll be curious to see how it plays out over the next three. I kind of think if any one of these series could go seven games, this is likely going to be it. But I would imagine that it'll be the same story, that it'll be a very small margin of difference between the teams.
All right, extra day of rest for Carolina and Tampa. And you're right, EJ. I'm not disrespecting the Lightning when I say I think the winner of Colorado-Vegas wins the Cup, because the Lightning are right there. It's so difficult to repeat. And the one thing I'll say about Tampa, any way you want to play it, right? Florida was wide open, you know, and they have certainly the firepower to get the goals you need. And you got to win a couple of 2-1 games like they did in Carolina in the first two games of that series. They can do that as well. So, certainly Tampa's got to have to be somebody to consider, because it doesn't seem, however you want to play it, they seem to have the ability to do it, to do that.
And that's the mark of a champion, right? I mean, I can remember those Islander teams that I was fortunate enough to watch in the early 80s that won four straight cups. I mean, if you wanted to try to beat them in the alley, they were happy to slug it out with you. If you wanted to try to play a skill game, they were happy to do that. You let us know how you want to play and we'll beat you. And it was the case with the Montreal Canadiens back before them. Those that Canadiens team that won, you know, the four cups before the Islanders, and that's been the trademark of championship teams in this sport for many, many, many years. And it's something that the Tampa Bay Lightning can certainly hang their hat on moving forward. Is you know, now that they have got a relatively healthy lineup, this is a really strong team with a great goaltender. I mean, the only thing I would say is that, you know, If you can get in on their defensemen a little bit, and that's excluding Victor Hedman and likely McDonough as well. I mean, there's maybe you could maybe mine some chances against some of their back end guys, but they're going to be hard to deal with. And you know, we'll see. Carolina's got the extra day off. I thought Carolina played very well in the early part of the second period. They were dominating the game. They ended up getting a 4-2 lead. Then they just took some bad penalties, and the next thing you know, they're trailing by the end of the second period. So, you know, that's the thing about the Tampa Bay Lightning, is that you just can't give them opportunities on the power play. They're too good. And when you think about it, no matter who they match up with, you've got to give the goalie advantage to Vasilevskiy. Even if he gets outplayed, you probably still have to say he gets the edge. And, you know, I don't know if there's a better defenseman in the league than Victor Hedman. There probably isn't. So, you know, those are two areas where the Tampa Bay Lightning start off in a pretty good shape.
Yeah.
Pretty good shape. They've got just tough. You know, give Julian Brisbois a lot of credit. You know, he went out and traded some significant assets to get Barkley Goodrow and Blake Coleman, and those guys have been an integral part of the success of this group. I mean, they have been important players for that team.
You know, like Cooper said, sometimes you need that four-wheel drive when you've got a bunch of Ferraris, and that's certainly what Goodrow and Coleman have been. You mentioned Hedman, and I was having this conversation with our producer here, Anthony Pusick. You know, back in the day when the Yankees were winning their fourth championships in 5 years, they had Mariano Rivera. That was something that nobody else had. Is Hedman at that level that the Tampa Bay Lightning have him and nobody else has anybody like him, and that's the difference maker? And you go back a couple of years ago when they got swept by Columbus, why? Well, he wasn't in the lineup. Like, is he as big a difference maker as anybody right now in the league?
I think he may be. I think that may be a good point. I mean, it's hard in hockey where, you know, even a guy like Hedman, he can play half the game, but he usually doesn't play more than half the game. You know what I mean? So, but you can use him in a lot of situations. You can use him on the power play. I call him the maestro at the top of that power play because he distributes the puck so well and sets those guys up for success. Defensively, he's hard to play against. He's 6'6". He skates well. He can jump up in the play. He's a brilliant player when you watch him. Watch him on the power play, Don. He'll slide in from that center point, and he'll take ice, and he'll make the zone even smaller. When you give him ice, he'll take the ice and then make the pass. He's just a brilliant player in so many ways. He's really, he was the second overall draft pick way back when, and he's matured right now into something really special. He's somewhat reminiscent, I guess, to me of like Larry Robinson as a big left shot defenseman, a Chris Pronger. Pronger was much more of an edgy, nasty, hard player, and maybe not quite as all around as Hedman in some areas. But that's pretty high praise, because both those guys are, they're both probably top 10 defensemen all time in this game, and Victor Hedman is a brilliant player. So, yeah, they're very fortunate to have him, there's no doubt. And if you look throughout the history of the game, the teams that win the Stanley Cup usually have a player that fits in that ilk somewhere at the top of their defensive group to set the table for everyone else and to play in all those big moments.
Yeah, he's definitely very, very special. No, there's no question about it. And that's something that's nice to have. And that's why Tampa always has to be a part of the equation. And they can certainly wrap things up tomorrow with a win in Carolina against the Hurricanes, a place they won already twice in this series. Gerard Gallant was going to get a job. There's no question. He's a good coach. What he did with Vegas a couple of years ago, he's been around a long time. If you're a general manager, you've already talked to him, considering him, the job he did at the Worlds, does that up the ante at all? Does that change perspective at all? Does that secure a position quicker for him? How do you look at him now, or any differently after what he was able to do with Team Canada?
Well, it doesn't hurt him that Canada came back and they ended up making the playoff round. Based on the fact that I think it was Latvia and Germany didn't go to overtime in their game, and it was a 2-1 game they played. So if that game had gone to overtime because of the way the point system is at the World Championships, Canada would have not been even in the playoffs. So they turn around, they beat Russia, they beat Team USA, they beat Finland, they win the gold medal. Gerard Gallant is a very accomplished coach. When you think about what he did with the Vegas Golden Knights to take an expansion team to the Cup Final, he had success in Florida. People know who he is. I guess, like I said, I don't think it hurts him that he has, this kind of comeback performance and the team wins the gold medal, but I don't know if it changes your opinion that much. It might create more of a little bit of a bidding war if there's other teams that are looking for his services now, because there's maybe a little more heat under the fire. But I think if you were interested in Gerard Gallant as a coach, you knew what you wanted and you liked him to begin with. So we'll see. There's been the rumor that he's going to be the Rangers' next coach, and I'll be curious to see how that plays out, because he would, obviously he's been a successful guy in his career.
Yeah, no, there's no question. I always felt that if I saw what he did in Vegas, if I was Seattle, I'd be like, that's the guy that I want to have. But you're right, it's going to be a bidding war, and we'll see how that works itself out. And
Seattle, let's face it, he went to Vegas in an expansion situation, went to the Cup Final.
Yeah.
So that would tell you, that he's certainly been through a circumstance like that and been very successful. Now, Vegas went about things differently. I don't know how his first year and as they, try to grow and develop. Vegas went into a we-want-to-win-right-now mode immediately, whereas Seattle may take a different approach. But certainly that's something I think Ronnie Francis would be looking at in terms of, here's a guy that's had experience in this situation. There was a lot of thought that maybe Ronnie was waiting to see what's going to happen with Rod Brindamore. Rod Brindamore seems to say that even though he hasn't signed a deal yet, that he's going to
stay in Carolina, yeah.
Who knows? And the job in Seattle is still open. So I guess we'll see how it plays out.
So that's E.J. Raddick. Always good to talk to him on a Monday. We'll talk to him next week. Two games tonight, 6:30 Eastern, Islanders and the Bruins from Boston. Not really sure home ice really means a lot. Both of these teams know how to win on the road. Both have won on the road in this series. I just think that has all the earmarks of a game seven. So, you know, people are asking me, is this a must win for the Islanders? Does the team that wins this game win the series? I'm not sure. As a matter of fact, I know that either of these two teams can lose tonight and still win the series. Now, it means you have to win back-to-back games for sure, and you're facing elimination in both, and you don't want to be in that situation. But I think both of these teams are hardened. Both of these teams have a ton of playoff experience. So if either of these two teams were to lose Game 5, as pivotal as a Game 5 is, I can see either team bouncing back and certainly winning the series. But you want to be able to get that edge and put the team on notice that they're going to be facing elimination on Wednesday when these two teams hook up back at the Coliseum. So should be a lot of fun. And then the Jets and the Canadiens, and as we were talking about with EJ, that this series is over. Now, Petrie may not be able to go, and it changes things a little bit, so I wouldn't be shocked if Winnipeg's able to force another game here. But fact remains is this series is over, and if the Canadiens have any shot against the winner of Vegas and Colorado, one edge that they would have is a little bit of rest waiting for Vegas and Colorado to wrap up. Otherwise, I really don't see Montreal having much of a chance against either of those two teams. But then again, nobody gave them a chance, including myself, against Toronto, or thought they'd be in a position to sweep Winnipeg. So I guess anything is possible with this Canadiens team. But you got to figure that the winner of Colorado-Vegas at least is getting to the Stanley Cup Final. But Canadiens can get a bit of an edge. Back-to-back games usually favors the team with the momentum, and that certainly is Montreal. But if Petrie can't go, that could be a benefit for Winnipeg. And then if Winnipeg can win this game, force a game five, and then you see what happens back in Winnipeg. And if they can get that game six, they'd get Scheifele back. So maybe just find a way to get back into the series some way, shape, or form tonight in Montreal against the Canadiens. And that game will be an 8 o'clock start. And it looks like Canada is going to open up the borders. EJ talked about that last week on the podcast. Now, Trudeau's getting a lot of heat because there's people that want to travel back and forth, Canadians specifically, to the United States that haven't been able to do that, even vaccinated people. So they're kind of irritated that there's going to be a dispensation for the Canadians or the Jets if they were to advance to be able to go back and forth across the border, and then whoever they play, and in this case it'll be the winner of Colorado-Vegas, and that irritated some people, but we're getting better. It's getting much better here in the United States with the pandemic, getting better in Canada, and instead of having to try to find a neutral site for the winner of Winnipeg and Montreal to play, it looks like they'll get to play their home games, and they'll buy a little extra time because either team that wins, they're going to have home ice disadvantage. The series would start in the United States anyway, so they wouldn't have to worry about game three of the third round for that to happen, but they'd still have to allow the Canadians to cross the border and then come back in. But it looks like all that is going to be no problem, which I think is good because you want to be able to have home ice. And the Canadians already have had 2,500 people in the building. Maybe that'll expand for the next round. And what you're seeing in Vegas, what you're seeing in Boston, what you're seeing at the Coliseum, Carolina, Tampa, the atmosphere has been tremendous with these buildings near full or full in the case of Vegas and Boston. And that's an edge because you missed the fans last year, but you understood it. But the one thing you don't want to have is a situation where, like, let's say, you know, Montreal, they advance, they go to Vegas for games one and two, full building, apoplectic atmosphere, and then you go to a building with like less than 3,000 people for games three and four. Kind of takes the fun out of stuff. So hopefully Canada can kind of expand some things and get some fans back in the building, because you really get a sense that the fans have something to do with it, right? And really adds to the atmosphere. So you'd love to be able to get every building, and it looks like all of the American teams will have close to capacity, but it doesn't look like Montreal is going to get to that point. But at least they have 2,500 people in the building as opposed to the 550 in Winnipeg and the 550 in Toronto. And we'll see if that does get a chance to expand beyond the 2,500 people for Montreal for game three and four of the third round. Got to stop that whole conference final. There is no conference final. It's the third round, and then, of course, the Stanley Cup final. I guess the technical term for this would be the semifinals when we get to the third round, but I got to get out of the habit of calling it the conference final for sure. All right, we'll be back again on Wednesday. We'll get into your tweets. Wanted to have some one-on-one with EJ, but we'll be able to answer your questions and get a clearer picture. Maybe Montreal finishes things off. By the time we get to Wednesday, somebody will have a 3-2 series lead with the Islanders and the Bruins. Possibility by the time we get to Wednesday, Tampa would have advanced, and we'll know who's got the 3-2 edge in Vegas and Colorado. So we'll be back with you again on Wednesday. Want to get back in touch with me? The best way to do that is at Don LaGreca, hashtag game misconduct. Got to put the hashtag in so we're able to find it through all the tweets that we get. We'll be back with you again on Wednesday. This was the Monday edition of Game Misconduct.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.